Greetings and welcome to the For the Ride podcast. I'm your host, Adam Vanderveen, and if you are listening from the U.S. or Canada, I hope you've just enjoyed a really excellent Labor Day weekend with your friends and family. And before I dive in, we'll just do our standard reminder that all the views and opinions expressed on the podcast are solely those of myself and the guest, and not representative of Triumph Motorcycles. All right, today we've got a great interview for you, but before we dive into that, let's just quick cover off a few of our regular topics. We'll start with a listener comment. Today's comment comes from MKEDN, or Mike D. And Mike said, "Never enough moto movies. Adam, thank you for the Kelly Blatz interview. I will absolutely watch his Road Racer movies on Amazon Prime as soon as it's out. I'm excited that motorcycle-themed movies are being produced, but still not enough in my biased opinion. The podcasts are great, and I look forward to every episode. Peace, Mike D. from SoCal." All right, Mike, that is a little bit aged, but I picked yours just because there is another movie which features a Triumph motorcycle out now. It actually came out last week on Netflix, and it is called The Thursday Murder Club. So always fun to talk about new movies that feature the motorcycles. If you want to check out the latest one, you can check out The Thursday Murder Club, now live on Netflix. And if you don't feel like watching a movie at home and you actually want to get out to a theater, I believe you can still watch Freakier Friday, which features a beautiful Thruxton final edition in that movie. So Mike, thank you for the comment. It was a great excuse to talk about some movies. And as a thank you, as a token of our appreciation, we'd love to send you a t-shirt. Please just send me an email to fortheride.us@triumphmotorcycles.com. We're just going to need your t-shirt size and an address, and we'll get one shipped out to you right away. If anybody else would love to win a new t-shirt from Triumph Motorcycles, we would love to hear from you. So please just leave us a comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if we read your comment and you hear that, then we will ship you a free t-shirt just for reaching out to us. All right, next we're going to cover the news. And this one is a fun one. Mikhail Pearson just competed on a Triumph motorcycle on one of our new Enduro models at the International 6-Day Enduros, the ISDE. This race has been going on forever. The first one ever was in 1913. Some people call it the Olympics of motorcycling. It's a 6-day contest that demands absolute endurance, consistency, and skill. And for the first ever modern day outing on a Triumph motorcycle, Mikhail did pretty darn good for us. In fact, he took a podium in Enduro 1 and he finished the overall 6-day event in fourth place. So congrats, Mikhail, on the great performance and just another bit of great news seeing Triumph Motorcycles competing in all of these off-road events all around the world. Now, if you'd love to see some of those Triumph off-road motorcycles in person, you can check us out. We're going to have a display at the GNCC race, the upcoming GNCC race at the Mountaineer in West Virginia. That's going to be in late September. You can find info about that on triumphontour.com. The other event, the other big event you can find info about on triumphontour.com is, again, Barber Vintage Festival, where we will once again be hosting the Isle of Triumph space. I talked about that a little bit on the last episode where I mentioned that For the Ride podcast alum English Nick is actually going to be headlining the stage on Saturday evening with his band, a tribute British rock band called Motorboat. But the other cool news I'd love to share with you this week, we are now going to be pre-selling 2025 Isle of Triumph t-shirts, and we're going to be pre-selling a full English breakfast for every morning of Barber Vintage Festival. One super cool piece of news about that t-shirt is it's actually been designed by yet another For the Ride podcast alum, James Willis. If you remember, James is a world-class artist. He specializes in doing these beautiful tribute guitar cases. Lots of those go to really high-profile musicians as owners. And James is gracious enough to agree to design the 2025 Isle of Triumph t-shirt. It's beautiful artwork. Go check it out and purchase one for yourself at triumphontour.com. All right, with all that out of the way, I'd love to introduce today's guest. It is Simon Cudby, Most of you guys would be familiar with him from his photography work. He's been featured in Racer X for many, many years. He's the one that photographed all of your motocross and supercross heroes for years and years, and is great to sit down and talk to him about that aspect of his career and a little bit about what he's up to these days. So without further ado, please enjoy that interview.
I got the key to the highway. I'm all packed and I'ma go. Lord, let me ride out tomorrow, honey. I won't be back.
So Simon, we started talking a few years ago. I only really know you in the context of your profession, your current profession as a photographer. But maybe we'll start there. I think, you know, a couple of years ago you reached out and we really just started because you borrowed some adventure bikes for some of your own projects that you were working on.
Yeah, that's right. We had a couple of, 1200s, and we went to, I'm trying to remember where we went on that trip. We do a lot of adventure bike trips and photography and video projects now, and traveling around. Yeah, I think we got some. We went up Northern California coast, and then we did a ride into Death Valley too. That was an event, literally an adventure, you know, adventure bikes. Yeah, it's been good to get to know you, and thanks to Triumph for the loaners of some great bikes. You know, makes it good for us, and it's good because we do a lot of shooting for Alpine Stars and some other adventure brands, and it's cool to have Triumph bikes show up in all these other avenues. You know, with these other brands.
No, yeah, it's nice, and you know, we could look at it from the standpoint of, you know, well, Triumph makes gear. We don't necessarily want to support other apparel companies, but I would personally frown on that because, you know, all of our riders are fans of all sorts of type of gear. And if our bikes aren't seen on it, then they're just frankly seen a lot less. And, you know, motorcycle community is a small enough community that it's good to, It just doesn't work to play that way. I don't, in my opinion.
Well, it's cool actually to see Triumph getting into motocross and supercross in the States, because that was my sort of background as far as photography and video projects. I've been shooting for Racer X since about 1999. Shot my first supercross in 1996. And I actually didn't ride much before that at all. I grew up in England, and where we lived, it was like nobody really had some extra cash laying around to buy motorcycles. Although my mum and dad used to ride. They lived in London in the 50s, and they would bomb around London on street bikes. And then as I got into photography as a teenager, my dad and I would go to Brands Hatch car racing track. And my dad was really into the bikes, and I was really into the cars, you know, and that's actually how I got into photography. And but yeah, my dad's been a bike nut forever, and it's cool now for me to talk to my dad on the phone, and he's like, "How many bikes have you got? And what are you riding?" And you know, it's cool because I think he thinks it's cool that I ride now, because I didn't ride when I was a kid. You know?
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I mean, you even mentioned you had a quick chat with him yesterday, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I told him because it's really cool these days, because back when I first moved to the States a long, long, long time ago, you know, we'd call him on the phone, but now with technology, you can FaceTime, video, and all that kind of stuff. And I told him, I'm like, "Oh, I'm going to West Virginia. I'm doing a photo shoot for Triumph," and he's like, "Oh, that's great," you know. So it was cool.
I bet. This is lost my father a few years ago, but I think certainly I miss just the regular, you know, chats with him. We had a great relationship, but he was maybe one of the few people in my life that, like, it just, I knew a lot of the things I did made him proud, and that like he's probably one of the few people that I actually cared was proud of, you know, proud of me. So, but that's cool that, you know, you get to have that experience now.
I'll be riding. Sometimes I'm like, oh, my dad would think this is cool, you know, on some cool road in the mountains or somewhere in a different country. You know, we've ridden some different places, you know, Iceland and Argentina and places like that. And
oh, wow.
I just think my dad would be like, man, this is cool, you know?
Well, that's it. Yeah. That's the first time I ever went golfing. It's not something I did growing up, but actually in a different life, I worked on the Buell brand. Mm-hmm. And when they launched the 1125R, we happened to do a track day at Laguna Seca. And we got rained out that day. And, you know, we just sort of canceled the afternoon. I started looking for something to do. And I saw that, you know, the golf course was down there in Monterey, Pebble Beach, right? I'm like, wow, that's an iconic course. I've heard about that. I'm just curious about it. I want to go see it. And as soon as I got there, you know, the skies opened up. The sun came out. It's 3 p.m. I'm like, oh, well, I'm here. Might as well go talk to somebody. And I got the deal of a lifetime. I think it was, you know, this was early 2000s. But, you know, for $50, they let me have clubs and a golf cart. And they said, you can just go out there until sunset.
That's awesome.
And it was, I mean, it was incredible. But that, you know, I knew enough of this place that it was special, but also it didn't mean the same to me because I didn't grow up playing and dreaming to play that round. So, yep. But you know, my dad was into golf, and that was the first call. I'm like, he would think this is the coolest thing ever. Right. So,
yeah, that's funny. Yeah. Yeah. I was, like I say, growing up, you'd be lucky if you had a 10 speed, you know, 10 speed bicycle. And there was one kid in town that had a dirt bike, and he'd do like scrambles up in the mountain, up in the hills, up on the moors where I grew up. And I remember going to see him race once, and it was just a muddy bog fest, you know. When I moved to California, connected with some guys, and none of us had really ridden. Well, there was one guy that had like the cool CR250, and we all just ended up buying, you know, some used 125s and started to ride. And I mean, I was like 29 or 30 at that point, you know, so I hadn't grown up riding really, you know, so just went from there. And then I was doing photography, you know, I went to school in England to do photography, and I've always been a photographer. So somehow ended up finding my way into the motocross industry to shoot, you know. And met up with like Davey Coombs from Racer X magazine and Eric Johnson, and they kind of just went from there, you know. And I do some team shoots for various teams and stuff now, and still do some magazine stuff, but my main focus is doing this adventure bike travel stuff.
Oh, good. Well, that's certainly you know, very enjoyable, right? So I think you're photography is so well known in the off-road industry. By the way, I mean, if you need to cough, go for it.
Cause
well, and we have, you know, two tracks here, so we'll just mute it out on your track. No worries. I can just see where you've had this, great career and you're well known for that. But, now you get to do these projects where it's, you know, it fulfills this adventurous spirit as well at the same time.
I mean I was fortunate enough. It's kind of one of those things like, be careful what you wish for, right? So I was fortunate enough to be successful in my photography business as far as going to the races and that kind of thing. And but you start going to every single race every weekend, and with the dawn of Instagram and all those kind of things, you know, more than 10 years ago, all of a sudden, instead of it being like, I'm going to go and shoot this race and then bring the film back and develop it and all that kind of stuff, now it's like you're on deadline all day, you know. You're constantly sorry, I'm gonna move my mic a little bit because I'm constantly on you're constantly on deadline all day, and delivering images and all that kind of thing. So it kind of took the sort of creativity out of shooting a race, if there is such a thing, because honestly, it's, you're kind of there recording what's happening in front of you. You don't really have any control over it. I mean, you can control where you stand and your lens and technical stuff, but that's about it, you know. But so going to the races for so many years, and then I did like a 4 or 5 year stint towards the end of going to the races where I went to every single one, and that's just,
that pace is, that, yeah, unreal.
I couldn't do it anymore. And I honestly, big respect to all the people that are still there doing it, like a lot of the mechanics and team members and that kind of thing, you know. I don't know how they do it every weekend, but I think it was like 2015 I bought my first adventure bike, and I had a couple buddies that would go to Baja quite a lot to ride, and I was like, I want to do that, you know. And then I saw the long way round Charlie Borman, Ewan McGregor thing, like a lot of people did, and really inspirational. And yeah, I got my bike and started riding, and then kind of fell in love with it, you know. And it was good because it was sort of my way to exit going to every single Supercross race and have something beyond that, you know what I mean. And I started an adventure bike magazine with a couple guys, and that was good while it lasted. And I moved to Idaho for several years, and yeah, it was good. And then kind of took a different direction, and I ended up moving back to California because honestly, that's where a lot of the motorcycle industry is, and a lot of the Supercross stuff. I still shoot for Racer X in some capacity, you know, bike test videos and some events and that kind of thing. But you know, being closer to LAX, if you want to fly to Argentina, is a bit easier, you know. So
yeah, absolutely. And and if you want to fly to Charleston, West Virginia, it's not quite as easy.
No.
there are no direct flights into here.
Yeah, no, it's fine. But
yeah, this has been a lovely town. Actually, I was quite pleasantly surprised that this is a nice area, and the nature around here is gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, we rode some trails yesterday when we were shooting this undisclosed motorcycle, we'll call it. We're really fun. I mean, my buddy Jordan is a video guy, and we both had our backpacks full of gear and took off with a couple of riders and rode some trails that were really fun, you know.
Yeah, you guys got after it. I had a taste of it the day before, so yeah. We got really fortunate. We found a local guide, and a gentleman named Ryan. He's got a YouTube channel. I forget the name of it offhand, but I'll put it in the link. And then Jamie, who handcrafted this course about a year ago. So, I mean, his stories were, it was just so cool to hear the story of, so this is part of the Hatfield-McCoy trail system. And so in West Virginia, there's that this trail system that it's mostly for ATVs and side-by-sides. And a lot of the courses, maybe, you know, anywhere between 3 and let's say 20% are single track for motorcycles. Otherwise, it's mostly bigger trails for ATVs and side-by-sides. But the state, you know, they found some land just outside of Charleston, West Virginia, and that, you know, they tasked this gentleman Jamie with they gave him a 3-month deadline to create a park that was dedicated to off-road motorcycles, so no ATVs on this one. And I think he did a fantastic job with it.
Yeah, it was cool because the, you know, even right out of the gate, or going through the gate actually, you know, you get on the trail and you're like, oh, okay, and uphill switchbacks, and you're like, okay, yeah, okay. And then you get on some other single track that was like, oh, this is like legit, you know, real deal, up and down with rocks and trees and roots and ruts. And yeah, it was challenging, especially with a backpack full of camera gear.
Oh
yeah.
I believe it. they took me to not those challenging places. So I went out scouting on Monday. I'm probably out of the whole group of us that were here this week, by far I'm the least experienced. So they were just, you know, ride ahead to the next junction and wait for me there so that I didn't miss the turn. But it was rough. I was really sore. I kept up, only fell a couple times, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
but
it was really, really good. Good fun yesterday, and we shot a bunch of photos and had a couple of riders with us that did a really good job, and hope you guys like this new bike in a couple of weeks.
No, it's going to be good. And I will disclose where we were, because actually they said they're happy for us to promote this place. You know, it's brand new, they want to get riders out here, but it's in Tornado, West Virginia, so that they're just calling it the Tornado MX as part of the Hatfield McCoy. So, you know, check it out. If you do any sort of off-road riding, you know, not track stuff, but woods riding, you're going to love this place.
Yeah, it was really, really impressive facility. The parking lot, super clean. And, you know, the trailhead's right across the street. And all of us, you know, you're straight into it, you know. And a lot of different loops that join up and, you know, make sure you bring a map, because you could
you get lost really
yeah
quick.
It does all start looking the same. So I actually there was a group of five of us coming back yesterday, and I was at the back, and it got a little bit dusty towards the end of the day there, and I missed a turn, and my buddy in front of me was in the turn, but I didn't see him, and all of a sudden I'm like, this doesn't look familiar. So backtracked, and Ryan, our guide, graciously came back and rescued me. So I was able to get back to the truck.
Yeah, I did. I mean, something similar. There was a couple times where, like, they just got a good ways ahead of me. And maybe they didn't pause at a junction because they thought it was obvious. And I would just turn off my bike and listen for their bikes to figure out which way to go.
Well, I did that too. But there was a couple of other guys we'd just seen. And I'm like, is that those guys or is that my guys? So, I mean, definitely, you know, that trail etiquette where you sort of wait at the intersection and make sure that the guy behind you, you might see him, but you got to make sure that he sees you, because he's focused on the trail while he's riding up towards you, you know.
Exactly. So I'd love to rewind a little bit. And by the way, I'll weave this in here. I did mention my dad a little bit, but only in the context of being a father. But I should say that he had a full career as a commercial photographer
as
well.
Awesome.
So quite a bit different than what you're doing. It was all commercial photography. So, a lot of product, shoots. He owned a studio. When I was a kid, my nursery was next to his office, and he converted an old firehouse. Awesome. So he had, I want to say, 6 shooting bays, in this old firehouse. And the cool thing about being a firehouse is they could do vehicles too.
You need the space, right?
Yeah. So it was neat. So I mean, I grew up in that environment. So I definitely speak the language a little bit. I didn't, you know, get the art from him. I think and my parents worked together. So my mom sort of managed the business, and he was the creative, and I probably took more after my mom than him, but it was really nice to just have, you know, the exposure to that industry. And certainly I worked in it a little bit, but I just, you know, I think artists see things that other people don't see, and I certainly recognize that in him, but I don't think I have that in the same way, where, you know, for me, just business idea, like I wouldn't say I'm not creative, but I'm just creative in a different sense, and like, you know, I'll get ideas on projects and things, but it's a little bit different than just being creative in the sense of visual creativity.
It's funny you talk about the car or the product photography. Before I ever swung a leg over a dirt bike or shot much action stuff, I mean, I used to shoot, well, I was saying, me and my dad go to Brands Hatch, and I'd shoot photos there, and I had an uncle that had a cool camera and I borrowed it, you know. But before I, you know, when I was in California, I wasn't really shooting much action, and I was, this like early 90s, and I was assisting for actually a car photographer who we'd shoot for like Nissan, and we'd shoot like 8x10 film and huge cameras, and we'd be in these big there's a big place called South Bay Studios in Long Beach, and we shot there for like 4 months in a row, you know, for this Nissan brochure. And it was all very, very technical, you know, like these 8x10 film, you know, if you're thinking about like a 35 millimeter slide, it's like slide film, but it's 8 inches by 10 inches.
It's a full sheet of paper.
Yeah.
But that entire sheet is the material
That's
of
the film.
Yeah.
So the quality is insane, and it's also very expensive. And, you know, we'd set up and shoot like 8x10 Polaroids, and they actually had a film processing lab in this car photography studio set up. And so we'd shoot test film and excuse me. And then it was a big project. And, so my background is more actually studio than action, or, you know. And then I was really into landscape photography, and, you know, I, traveled a lot around Southwest of America shooting, and had a 4x5 camera and shooting black and white film and trying to shoot artsy photos and stuff. So it's funny, because now with the adventure bike stuff, you know, my love of motorcycles plus my love of landscape photography, it's kind of meshed together. And I really enjoy shooting that kind of stuff. And like I say, I loved going to the races, and I still, you know, those guys are incredible athletes, and I love the just the style of those motorcycles, and the graphics and the gear, and, you know, the helmets and the cool goggles, and it's a cool thing, right? But what I'm doing now is a little bit different, but I've still got my hand in that part of the industry, you know.
Yeah, no, it's good to be able to do both, and you can. You're probably not feeling quite as burnt out.
Oh no!
But still get to, you know, live in that world a little bit.
Well, I've had some of my friends are like, they see me doing what I'm doing, and they're like, I thought you were trying to like slow down a bit or not travel so much. And then, you know, next week I'm going to Colorado for a week to shoot there, and then we're going to Chile in October to shoot. And basically, we shoot a lot of stuff for Alpine Stars, and then we'd shoot for other different brands, you know, like an oil company and a tire company and a bag company, that kind of thing. And, you know, like deliver these assets to these companies that end up, you know, using them in different places. So it's pretty good. I kind of don't want to tell anyone about it, cause I've kind of cracked the code, I think. I kind of got this thing going. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Well, and, but so just, you know, touching on the off-road side still a little bit more, it was neat that some of the riders that we had, that we worked with the past couple of days before you got here, they expressed their excitement that, like, oh my God, I'm going to be photographed by Simon. That, you know, you've earned a reputation, which is pretty cool.
Well, you can't see me rolling my eyes right here, because I'm kind of embarrassed by that, but I appreciate the support or whatever. Yeah, I don't think about it like that. I just do my work, and I was just fortunate enough throughout my career to meet the right people at the right time. You know, Davey Coombs, Eric Johnson, like I said, and they've allowed me to sort of just do what I do at the races. And I guess I've had some people say, oh, I had your pictures from Racer X, had them on the wall in my bedroom when I was a kid, that kind of thing. And I'm like, really? And, you know, it's like funny to think about that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's an interesting thing. I mean, right. But pre-internet, you know, I talk a lot to, you know, my boss, Rod, and, you know, he'll say that, you know, when he was growing up, as a motocross rider, he was also a fan of the sport, but, you know, you used to not be able to know any of the results live. So he would tell me that, you know, he'd wait for cycle news every single week to find out what happened in the races over the weekend. So
yeah, it's definitely changed. And without sounding like, oh, that old guy, you know, it's like, seeing how it is now, there's almost too much information. You know, it's like, I'm a real Formula One nut, and I just buy the Formula One TV package, and I watch every race, and it's analyzed to death, And at the end of a Sunday, I'm like, okay, I'm good. I've seen enough Formula One for this week, you know? Yeah. So I think actually now the TV coverage on Supercross and Motocross is so good that unless you have a lot of extra time throughout the week, I listen to some podcasts here and there, and I'll look at RacerX website and, you know, like maybe the Vital MX forum, and I'll read some of that stuff, you know, and, but it's just like, there's so much information, you know? So,
well that, yeah, that's maybe an interesting thought, is that in off-road racing, in motorcycle racing, there was this industry built up around it to cover it. And maybe it doesn't require as much coverage now because everybody's consuming it in real time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I actually have to say, you know, when I was going to the races, I keep saying when I was going to the races, but, you know, I'd kill myself at the races. You know, I'd work really, you know, you go to the track at 7 a.m. and, I mean, Supercross, you'd maybe get there at 8, but you wouldn't get back to your room until midnight, and then you maybe got another hour, and then you get up early and you're on the flight the next day and you're cranking out images, and you know, you've been sending photos all day. And I kind of got to the point where I'm like come Monday morning after a race weekend, nobody's going to look at your pictures anymore. And, but when it was the magazine, you know, there was, you get your pictures in the magazine. It's like this real thing you're holding in your hands, you know, but having the TV coverage now, like I say, it's so good that, I don't know, do you really go on Instagram and look at photos? Unless you've got like that 1 in a million shot. I mean, I got a Tomac photo 3 or 4 years ago, Anaheim. He was leading and he went over this little tabletop and guys were kind of scrubbing it a little bit, and he just threw it away. And I just happened to be in the right place at the right time and got the sequence. If it had just went over it normally, the photo's not that interesting, you know?
Right. Well, that, yeah, that there's a bit of chance then, yeah, in live,
yeah.
Photography. It's very different than, you know, setting up a commercial set.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, the team shoot stuff that I do, you know, we bring out strobes and all that kind of thing. And a lot of it, you know, if you watch Supercross on TV, excuse me, a lot of Supercross, you know, the low, fast, you know, really fast, but you want those style shots for, like, if it's a team shoot poster, you want like the whip shot where the bike's whipped over, you can see the sponsors are happy because they can see the graphics on the side of the bike and all that kind of thing. So a lot of that all that stuff at the team shoot stuff is all set up for sure.
Yeah. On the just kind of just touching a little bit more on, you know, I think why people connected a lot with your photography is that you were capturing their heroes. So that's, I mean, there's a bit of you know, you just happened to be the guy, but at the end of the day, everybody, you know, had these heroes and they're reading, you know, they're reading about and looking at their heroes in the magazine. And, you know, for due to some circumstance, you happened to be the guy that then conveyed that to them.
Yeah. I was in the right place at the right time. But as I say, growing up, I wasn't really into bikes, and so it's funny because a lot of the pro guys that I've shot, I have tons of respect for what they can do, because I, you know, as I started riding, I realized how hard it is, right? So, but I never tried to like be fanboy, because my deal was like, primarily I'm here to produce work for the client, and you know, the rider is there as part of that deal as well, you know, and I'm trying to make it easy for that rider, so that next time he's like, oh, I've got to do another photo shoot, you know, I'd rather than be like, oh yeah, that was okay last time, let's do it again. So I kind of focus down on that, making it streamlined for the riders too.
Yeah. And to some extent, I mean, it probably helps to not be a mega fan, because I'm sure that comes across a little bit. And if you approach everybody, you know, on a human level, on a professional level, you're going to make them comfortable.
Yeah. Well, right? It's funny, because I maybe take it too far the other direction sometimes. I mean, we went on that adventure bike ride with Ricky Carmichael on the Triumphs a couple of years ago, and we had the Cardo headsets on, and we're all talking, and you know, it's pretty, there's a lot of back and forth. Let's just say that.
There definitely is. So I've been, you know, fortunate enough to, you know, sit at the table with a lot of legends in the sport. And for whatever it's worth, I really kind of appreciate the role I'm in, you know, in this period of my life. But it's, you know, similar to you, I didn't grow up in it, so I wasn't a fan, and it just lets me kind of be comfortable with everybody. But also it's really interesting, because when you're sitting at the table, like one of the downsides is I feel like I can't really contribute, because they're talking stories built on decades of relationships. Yeah. And I'm not a part of that, so it's fun to listen in on. But
yeah, we were talking actually yesterday when we got back to the trailer with the bikes yesterday afternoon. We were talking about Jeff Stanton, you know, and Jeff Stanton was racing up until I think 1994, and I hadn't met him, and I'd never photographed him racing, and I wasn't really into bikes until 96. You know, when I started shooting, I really got into it, and I bought a bike and all that kind of thing. But so Jeff Stanton, I've been on a couple of adventure bike rides with him, and it's cool because I think he looks at me differently, because I'm not like, oh, it's Jeff Stanton. I'm like, it's just Jeff. It's Jeff, you know. Yeah. And I'm not like fanboying on him, you know. And I think that's different for a guy like that, you know, somebody that doesn't really know what he did. I mean, obviously I know what he did, but I never actually saw him race in real life. And, you know, I never saw it on TV, that kind of thing. So it's nice to meet these guys, and not, obviously we love motorcycles together, you know, but I didn't watch him race.
Yeah, no, I'm like I said, I'm sort of the same. Well, and I'm meeting a lot of people only in their current context, and then you know, it's funny, I'll find out about these incredible backstories that a lot of people have. I'm like, oh, I didn't know you did that. So it's been fun. You mentioned I'll come back to, you know, the technical aspect of photography a little bit. You mentioned that you went to school for it, and I think, well, certainly today that would be really unique. I don't tend to think of a lot of photographers that take like that direct of a route, or, you know, I feel like a lot of photographers learn the trade, you know, in practice, not necessarily in a school environment. How did you even think to go to school for that? And, you know, do you feel like you benefited from the formal education?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I grew up in England, and you know, you can leave high school at 16 or stay on for two more years and do what they call A levels, which are advanced levels. But I was really, apparently really good at technical drawing. You know, this is before CAD and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, manual drawing, technical drawing. And I had this thing, I'm like, I'm going to be an architect. And that was my thing. But I didn't really find the right avenue. And at the same time, over the previous couple of years, I've really got this photography bug, and had the uncle with the cool camera that my parents bought for me. And anyway, I ended up going to this technical college to do photography when I was 16 until I was 18. And that was a huge eye-opener for me, you know. Technically, I learned so much stuff. I mean, back then we were processing slide film, which is highly, you know, real narrow margins for error, you know, that kind of thing, and doing color and black and white printing. And so I have that theoretical background of the technical aspect of photography from color and you know, optics and all that kind of stuff. So,
you know, I would say pre-digital, there was a lot more science in it. Now you can look at it as an art, but certainly there was, it's always been an art, but there also used to be a really a science to it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you got to look. Actually, I was talking to one of the guys yesterday on the trail when we were shooting, and Ryan, the YouTube Ryan, he's an awesome guy, and we were talking a lot because he really helped me, because we had some strobe stuff and he was helping me with that. And he's like, man, I didn't realize, like, he's like, you're so focused in on like what you're doing, and And I said, yeah, you have to know before you shoot the photo what it's going to look like, and technically how do I get that photo, and where do I need to stand, and where is the lighting going to have to be, and what are my settings going to be? And then you're thinking about that, but before you even get to that point, you've got to go, okay, if I stand right here and this guy comes over this little rise and there's a tree there, and that works, you know. So you sort of have this subconscious mental checklist, I'd say, with you're trying to shoot photos and, okay, does this work or doesn't it work? And if it does work, let's do it and make it work, you know. So technically you just get to that point.
Yeah. And so, I mean, so kind of describing some of the things you did yesterday, I mean, it sounds like, you know, in your process, you start with composition, yep, right? And so, yeah, composition being what are the things in the shot? Like, what do you see? But then you work your way into how to achieve the shot you want within that composition.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, firstly, I think with a lot of the photography, the guy's got to be doing something, you know. If you're just riding along, it's not very interesting. So, you know, he has to be going off a little drop off or doing a little wheelie or doing a turn or something, right? So, you know, that's one of the things you look at. And then obviously where you stand and what's in the background and what the lighting's like and how can you control that, you know. So there's a lot of things that I think at this point in my career I just kind of do, you know. But I think it's deep down, it's a checklist of yes, 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 that works. No, this doesn't work. And here's why. Okay, if I move over here, okay, now it works, kind of thing, you know.
Yeah. And yesterday is probably unique in the sense that we're in such a heavily wooded environment that lighting was challenging.
Yeah, it was dark. Yeah. It was really dark in there.
When I imagine, you know, a lot of the things that you do, it's not dark, it's bright. And if you're doing more action, you know, if you're doing real live coverage, you can't stop to do anything. But, you know, yesterday was, you're capturing movement, but it was sort of set. So you had some time to play around a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I said a couple times yesterday to Jordan, the video guy, I was like, you know, if I was shooting, let's say I was shooting a GNCC race at this facility here, this is how I'd shoot it, you know, because there isn't really another way unless you bring in, you know, a big truck with tons of gear and then you're kind of, the more gear you bring to these photo shoots, the more locked in you are in a spot, because if you want to go 200 yards down the trail, you got to load everything back up in the truck. Everyone's got to move down there. And then, you know, you just got to hope when you get there that that's actually what you want, because you've got a lot of time now invested in that. Whereas when we were shooting yesterday, it was kind of like a run and gun style. We were on our bikes, actually riding with our backpacks on with camera gear. And I like to shoot like that. That's what we do on our adventure bike trips. And, you know, we'll go to another country and we think we know what it looks like there. And we'll be with a guy that thinks he knows the kind of pictures we're trying to get and wants to take us to those places. So, you know, just hope that it all works out.
Yeah. Well, I saw some samples. It's looking really good so far.
Cool. I mean, yeah, it was funny because the technique I was using when we were shooting yesterday was, I used to shoot a lot of mountain bike stuff. There was like a little window in there of 3 or 4 years before I shot Supercross where I go to a lot of the pro mountain bike races, and a lot of that stuff is through the trees, and you know, you want to try and control the lighting, and so you bring like you bring some strobes and that kind of thing to try and light up under these you know, tree covered areas, you know, for these mountain bike races.
Yeah. So just for anybody listening, when this bike does come out, just for the record, all the photos you see of it will have been shot by Simon. And this is actually a little bit of a unique circumstance for us, where most you know, new model launch assets for Triumph are done centrally by the team in the UK, but this model was so specific to the US market, we just had to find the right environment to shoot it in. So we ended up doing it here and managing that shoot on our end.
Yeah, I mean, it's challenging, you know, definitely. Like, I was mentally worked yesterday, let's just say that, because, you know, you guys had scouted out the trails and stuff, and Jordan and I showed up the day before, and we get there and we did like a scouting loop with Ryan, the guide, and you know, straight away I'm like, it's dark in here, you know, so I'm like doing those mental calculations of how am I going to make this work, you know, kind of thing. So you know, showing up to shoot can be challenging, let's just say that. Yeah,
I bet. Well, do you enjoy it? Like, is it, I don't know, like in your personality, is it, do you get excited by the challenge? Or
yeah, but like digging real deep here, you know, I don't want to mess up, you know, I got, because I know, you know, your Triumph is a hugely important client for me, and the last thing I want to do is have a photo shoot where you guys are like, nah, it's not really what we wanted, and I'm just, you know, so it's like I'm you know, I'm doing all these mental calculations for the photography and the riding and all that kind of stuff, but I'm also trying to figure out what you want and where this fits, and are you happy? And you know, we came back at lunchtime and we downloaded some pictures, and you looked at them and you're like, you made some comments, so those comments are now like glued to my brain, and I'm like, okay. You know, so it's good, because that's how we move forward, and that's how you guys get the kind of stuff you want.
Yeah, you know? Well, and so yesterday, so this is really the first time I've been a part of a like this type of shoot since I've worked with Triumph. In my previous career, I would do that all the time, but I was in the boating industry, so you know, there would be a subject boat and a camera boat, and I'm always on the camera boat, and so you have much more access in real time. And I mean, that was a cool setup where basically the photographer's camera was in real time, Bluetooth feeding into a tablet that I had. So it was really cool, because you know, then it's just, it's easy, you know what you're getting. And you know, yesterday is quite the opposite, so there's just a lot of trust there. And you know, that's probably an interesting thing, that you're in a stage in your career where, you know, that there might be some pressure built on your reputation, because
I mean, definitely, like yesterday morning, I'm like, all right, let's go, it's go time, you know. And like, I gotta, and it's funny, because I was talking with Ryan again, the YouTube guy who's very successful at that, and he was guiding us around, and you know, he was talking about what he was commenting on what we were doing there yesterday, and he was like, man, you know, it's so focused in. It's, I'm like, look, like I got to deliver, you know, I can't just be, when I'm out here going, oh, I wonder what this will look like over here. Like, I have to be like, we're going here and we're shooting this. And, you know, you have to sort of grab the ball by the horns and make it happen, you know, because somebody's paying you money to do it, and you got to deliver the goods. And I want to do some more photo shoots for Triumph, you know, so there it's like, I'm like, you know, it's important on so many different levels, you know, so.
No, well, I'm excited for everybody to see your work, or your most recent work. So,
yeah.
Let's talk about some of the adventure stuff. So, I'm curious, is there a destination that you've gone that really stands out? Like that, because you've said you've got to see some really cool locations from around the world going on these, you know, rides/shoots.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one, I mean, we've been to some places, but I was just about to say one place, but I thought of another place just now. So I went to India in 2018 to the Himalayas, and it was like an adventure. You know, there's so many things happened. We flew into Kashmir, which is like a militarized zone between Pakistan and India. It's part of India, but Pakistan still thinks it's theirs. And you know, don't ask me how that's all going to work out, but so we went through, we're in the Himalayas, and you're on this side of a mountain, and come around the corner, there's a full-on military checkpoint, and it's not like, how's it going, guys, let's see your passports. It's like they're taking pictures of you, pictures of your bike, take your helmet off, you know, all these things. And that was a bit of a handful, and we had some reroutes that we had to do, and we ended up going over this one pass, because this other pass we were going to go over we couldn't get to, because the river had washed away the road up to it. And it turns out if we'd have gone across the original pass, we'd have been snowed in. Like, we saw the newspaper the next day, and there's cars under snow. So they got like 6 or 8 feet of snow in one day. Yeah, and anyway, it took me 60 hours to get back from Delhi to Los Angeles.
Oh, that's wild. We've our friends from Revzilla, when we came out with our the Speed 400 and Scrambler 400 motorcycles, we worked with them, and they did a ride that started going up that way, and some of the stories they have from that are phenomenal. But everything they said, echoed the challenges of that environment. And going into it, did you think it was going to be as challenging as it was?
It's funny, because there was my main goal going there, because I thought, I had a rough idea of where we were going, and I was actually with a guy, Dale, who works for Western Power Sports, and they, they have fly gear, and they're a big motorcycle parts distributor. And his son-in-law, Bilal, was an Indian guy. And so we met up with Dale and Bilal and had an idea of where we were going. But my main thing, I'd seen this video of the most dangerous road in the world, which is like you're on the side of a cliff. There's a cliff face on your left going up and a cliff face on your right going down. And you're just on a one-lane wide road going across the edge of this cliff, Anyway. And we did it. So that was like one of the times in my life where I'm like, all right, suck it up. Here we go. Cause I'm scared of heights as well.
Oh, no.
So I was like,
that's not good.
Yeah. I don't know how we did it, but that was a challenge. And then obviously the Himalayas, you've been to, you go to Mammoth in California, or you go to Colorado and you're like, oh yeah, 14,000 feet. And then you go to the Himalayas and it's literally that everything looks twice as big. You're looking up and you keep looking up and then you finally get to the top of the mountain and then you look down and it's like this huge valley down below you, it's just, everything's just seemed supersized over there.
Yeah, I bet. And across all these, adventures you've taken, what feels unique about doing it via motorcycle compared to, just going there to sightsee or traveling in a car?
You get to go places that other people don't go. You will fly into a city and then by the next day we're somewhere where there aren't any other people. We'll be riding on trails and it's funny. My wife, she rides motorcycles. When my kids were little, we'd go to the desert and ride and that kind of stuff. But I'm always like, oh, I wish she was here right now to see this, because you just get to see things that the average, I don't want to say the average person, that doesn't sound very nice, but I'm just saying regular people living regular lives.
Yeah, we can say that. Non-riders, regular people.
Average people. No, sorry. No, but you know what I mean? So you get to see these cool places and that's what sticks out to me. And then having sort of the photography element is somehow, when I was born, I had something. It was like, I need to record this. I want to show people this, because it means so much to me, I want to show it to someone else,
Yeah, that's really cool. I've had that same sentiment, but I've just not, done it or felt capable of doing it in the same way where, I think any time that you go to a place and, one of the things in my life, I've happened to see a lot of cool places, but like kind of solo, not maybe have the person with me that I'd want to share it with. So there is that sense of wanting to at least capture it so you can share to somebody, whether somebody important to you or just people in general.
Yeah. You want to remember it for yourself too. So I think with photography, when I'm shooting, like I said earlier, I've got all these calculations going on in my head when I'm taking a picture. But at the end of the day, it's got to mean something to you, You don't want to just, sure, I'm a commercial photographer and I'm trying to help brands sell product, but I'm trying to do that by not really thinking about that part of it, I just want to go ride and capture what it was like to do that. And apparently other people like to go ride adventure bikes and look at that stuff too. So it's been good,
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and in that style, the a lot of the off-road, you know, competitive motocross stuff you've done, to some extent, it can inspire people, but also not everybody has the ability to, you know, be a professional racer, where a lot of the things you're doing now, you know, if you inspire somebody, they really could go do that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, actually, I remember yesterday at lunchtime, we were looking at some pictures, and I showed you one shot, and I'm like, there were some trees in the foreground out of focus, and the rider was actually quite small, far away. And, you know, it's one of those shots where you look at it and go, I want to go ride there, you know? So that, I feel that that's, people have told me that on some of the stuff we've shot before. They're like, oh, I really want to go there, you know, and ride that. And it would be cool. It'd be one thing to see that scene as a standalone photo. But once you add a motorcycle to it, you're like, oh, I want to be there, you know, I want to be on that motorcycle. So that's the game plan, I guess.
Well, that, I guess the bike being in the photo sends the message of you can get there.
Yeah,
you get there. It makes it accessible.
Right. Yeah. And I can remember when I first started riding adventure bikes, or right before I started riding adventure bikes, I'd be in my truck driving down the freeway, and I'd see a couple guys go by with the big metal cases, and I'm like, where are they going? What are they doing? How do they find time? Because I was like locked into the races. I had a schedule. I wasn't going anywhere, you know? So I'm like, oh man, I wish I could take off and go and ride on a bike somewhere, you know? So that was a big inspiration too, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Do you have, so you said, I mean, part of the capturing is just to remember it yourself. Do you have your own artwork in your home?
No. It's funny because, again, I say the phrase, when I was going to all the races, we had a room addition on the back of a house, and I had like a man cave with my office and a TV and all that kind of stuff. And for about 6 months, I had the walls, and I had like, you know, Ricky Carmichael jersey, Kevin Windham jersey mounted up, and some pictures, and, you know, it's sort of race memorabilia stuff. But after 6 months, I'm like, I can't look at motocross 24 hours a day, you know. I love it, but I've had my fill of it when I went to the race this weekend and
sure.
worked and shot, and so I kind of took it all down, you know.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Interesting. Do you think, will any of the adventure stuff go up?
Yeah, actually, I've been looking at getting some prints made. Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
But then it's like, I got taught my wife into being like, hey, I want to put this picture up here, you know, cause it's her house too. And so, you know, it'd probably be in the man cave, you know?
Yeah. As, like, is she, how does that work? You know, it obviously you're doing it, so she must be very supportive, but is there, you know, does she feel like she's missing out at all?
I come back from some of these trips, and I always tell her, I'm going to take you there, you know, like, so we're going to go, we went to riding Greece a couple, maybe 3 years ago, and that was awesome. And I'm like, we're going to fly into Greece, we're going to rent a little Suzuki Jimny rental car, and we're going to drive around the islands and just go exploring. Like, I'm not really like a big resort guy, you know, I want to go and look around, and I want to stay in little hotels and, you know, find these places. So yeah, I mean, I got really lucky. My wife is hugely supportive, and I couldn't do it without her. And I tell her that all the time. And, you know, like, we're going to Chile, we're going to be gone for like almost 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah. And by the way, I only ask that question because, you know, I have this similar experience and similar conversations, right? So, yeah, also, my wife, incredibly supportive. I couldn't do what I do, you know, without her, and, you know, being able to hold everything down at home. But also, you know, I know that she has some wanderlust, and it is hard for her to see me go and explore the world, because she also wants to do that. So try to find a balance. And
well, it's hard. Sure. Yeah, sorry to interrupt. It's hard too, right? Because you're, you know, technically I'm working, in air quotes, you know, and it's like, I'd love to bring you, but I need to find a bike for you. I don't want you to get hurt riding where we're riding, you know. It's too much pressure. So I'd rather just go explore in a rental car with you somewhere, or I have a big Ford truck, and we went to Moab actually a few months back, and I took her to some of the places we've ridden, you know. And but in a truck, it's slow going, you know.
Yeah. not quite the same, but I mean, you still see
it. Yeah, that's beautiful things, still. So, yeah.
Is there anything What's still on the bucket list?
I want to go to Egypt. However, I think it's just a big desert. I want to see the pyramids. And I think once I get the pyramid photo, I don't know what else I'm going to shoot else? There. Yeah. So, but I'd like to just go anyway to explore, maybe as a tourist, you know, that would be fun. I want to go back to Morocco. I went to a bike intro there for an adventure bike in 2017 or 2018. And, that was interesting. And it was like, you know, those media events, as I was part of the media then, and you know, you go there and you land late, you get up early, you're riding all day and you're just smoked, you know, and you don't really get to, I mean, we blew past some stuff. I'm like, oh, I want to shoot that, photos of that, but we're gone because I'm in a group of 10 guys and ripping across the desert, and you
and
don't really.
And it's about the ride, not where you are.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of. Yeah. So
did you write as well?
No, I've never. It's not really been my thing. I don't know. I'm kind of embarrassed because I'm, you know, growing up around. Well, not growing up, but working with. Getting into the industry with Davey and Eric from Racer X, who are prolific writers in the sport. And, you know, Davey's got a history degree. I mean, like, he knows a lot of stuff, right? And so I always feel like it would be like when Davey would shoot photos and he'd show me, you know, I'm like the other way, you know? Yeah. Like, he'd show me his iPhone photos from the first turn at the race, and I'd be like, oh, that's cool, you know? And it was cool, you sure, know, but still.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for me writing, I'm a little bit self-conscious about that, so I'm not really, it's not really my thing. And and it's funny, because we go on some of these trips, and we've got some stuff in Cycle News and stuff, and some other magazines, and I feel like, I mean, I could talk to somebody about the trip we went on if they want to ghostwrite it for me.
Yeah, well, I was something. Just curious because you mentioned you went on that launch, so I wasn't sure if that was part of your mandate.
Yeah, it was actually more like I did a stand-up video in the sand dunes, and it was like I was so tired. Like I got sick the night before. I was dehydrated. We're riding these adventure bikes through the sand dunes. I just winged it, you know. It's one of those moments where you just sort of go, okay, we're going to talk about this bike now and sort of go with it, you know.
Sure. And maybe I'll take a minute just to, you know, profess, you know, how skilled a lot of these motorcycle journalists are, right? And there's even different subsections of it. There's, you know, in the world that you've come from, there's a lot of guys that do race coverage. And that's a skill in itself because the breadth of knowledge that you have to have. But a lot of the guys that I've come to know are the testing editors. And I mean, so there's so many unique skill sets that they have to be good at their job, right? They have to, you know, actually be a good writer. They have to be able to communicate what they're thinking and feeling. They have to be a good rider, motorcycle rider, because they have to push the limits of the bike. But then the intangible here and what makes the good ones really good is just the length of the longevity of their career, because they're recalling, you know, models from 10 years ago. And they can compare a current model against previous generations of that exact same model and every one of its competitors that they've personally ridden. And just what blows my mind is the memory recall. Cause like my memory sucks. So that's the most impressive part of the whole thing, is just that they can remember the little details.
I mean, yeah, I've been doing actually a lot more like, where I'm like the pool photographer for the brand, you know, and we did the shootout in California a couple of weeks ago, and with Triumph on their enduro bike, and it was actually really cool because I get to hang out more with these journalists. Because when I was just strictly Racer X guy going to the races, you know, I'm all in with Racer X. That's my team, you know. But it's really nice to hang out with some of the other guys, and because I'm not sort of so into the races, and well, I'm into the races, but I'm not going to the races anymore so much. And it's just cool to hang out with some of the journalists that were from other publications now. You know, I did a thing, a side by side intro photos randomly a couple of weeks ago for a brand, and they had a video guy there that used to work for a different magazine, and I hadn't really talked to him much before that, but we got to hang out all day, and it was really neat, a really interesting guy, and you know, that was nice. And yeah, but get, you know, going back to like the skill level of these journalists, I mean, I don't know how these guys do it all the time. I mean, you think like, oh, it'd be so cool, you travel the world and like, but if you've ever flown to Morocco, it sucks. Like, right. It's like
there's the getting there bit.
Yeah, it's the getting there, you know, LAX to Atlanta to Paris to Casablanca to this other place I can't even remember. So, you know, 3 or 4 flights to get there, and you're there, and you're there for two days at most, and then you're back out again. And so by the time you get back, you've kind of been gone 5 days, but you're just hammered when you
right,
get home.
But you spend more days or just as many days traveling as you do being somewhere, and it's a grind.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like, definitely. Yeah.
If you think about, you know, the pace that you explained that you're doing with the races, you're traveling every weekend, but a lot of those guys are doing the same thing, but doing it internationally.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, like, sometimes, you know, if there was a launch in India, I'd be like, okay. Like, you know, like, yeah. Or, you know, that's something that takes, because you know, let's face it, you know, it's a business, right? So, you know, the companies are, the brand is trying to get the journalist to promote their product, but there's no financial loop there. You know, it's not like the company's not paying the journalist to come and do that. So I'm just trying to figure out how that all works. I mean, I've been in the industry a long time, and that, you know, there's advertising dollars that flow the other way, maybe. So I don't really know. I mean, when I started that adventure bike magazine, we had a couple of times where we got invited on press intro things, and it was kind of like we looked at the bottom line of what it was going to cost us to go and do it, and it kind of didn't make business sense. You know, it was kind of like the harsh reality of the age we're in right now, you know, that there aren't all those advertising dollars flowing and that kind of thing. So I kind of wonder sometimes how long a model like that's going to last, you know?
Yeah, well, I hope it does.
I mean, for sure.
Me and my role, like, we depend so much on that. It's a challenge. I think there, I would hope it never goes away completely. I could, you know, I can imagine it shrinking, because that's my thought of, well, how many opinions do you need?
Well, we talk about Ryan yesterday, YouTube, and I haven't followed him on YouTube, and I didn't know Ryan. But apparently he's super successful. So I think there's a lot of Ryans out there that we don't even know about.
Yeah. Well, and so he's a good example of just how granular things can get now, where, you know, if you look at traditional media, it had to be a little bit broader. And then it's hard to be granular, because you have to cover, you know, the big things. And, but now with YouTube, so Ryan, did this course that we ran yesterday, I think there's 60 different numbered trails.
Yeah.
And he's done a dedicated YouTube video on every single trail. Right. I mean, so that, like, that's so granular, but also incredibly valuable, where if you're, I mean, valuable to anybody that's thinking about riding there.
Yeah. Okay. Without sounding cynical, how does that get paid for? You know, like, Ryan and I were talking yesterday, and we were talking about the business a little bit too. And, you know, he's way up the road on the YouTube numbers and that. And I don't have hardly anything, because I haven't focused on any of that stuff, because I'm a professional photographer who has to, you know, put bread on the table, kind of thing. So if I go and work for a week for someone, I need to be paid for a week. I can't be like, I'm going to go work for a week and hope it turns into something else, you know, because I've had that happen a lot in my career, where I've shot for a brand and they're like, oh, help us out on this one, and then we'll do, you know, and it kind of never really happens, you know. And that, you know, that's really cynical. But obviously I use YouTube when I'm like, how do I change the oil on this bike, or how do, you know, microphone or this camera or something I need to find out.
Oh, it's a big machine. You're getting served ads.
I know, but it's just... like, still haven't wrapped my head around it.
No, my understanding, I've not personally really done YouTube, right? I don't have my own channel or anything. I wouldn't. It's not something I'm interested in. But I've spoken with enough people that do it, and I think there's just a tipping point. That's all. I think it's certainly like anything else. It's a struggle at first, and a lot of the people I've spoken to, maybe they started it without the intent that it's, you know, going to be a business. They've started it as a hobby, and then you know you kind of find a tipping point, and then they've just dove all in. But that's it. I think you just need a certain critical mass, and then the monetization works in your favor.
Well, you led me right into that one. So I've been on Instagram since kind of it started. My friend Brian was the editor at Racer X, and I can remember him like 2011 or 12. He's like, "Oh, you need to do Instagram, and we need to post photos." And I was like, "Oh God, another thing I got to do now," you know. And I was fortunate; I was at the right place at the right time. And as it was ramping up, I was tagging riders, you know, Ryan Dungey, Chad Reed, and they'd all like repost stuff. So all of a sudden, my number, you know, skyrocketed. So I had a lot of followers, and I was talking to somebody a couple months ago, and they were like, "Well, how many followers do you have?" And I have like 150,000 or something. But that's just historic. It's not grown in years because it just doesn't grow anymore for some reason. Even though I produce tons of I put content on there, you know. And you know, you can monetize Instagram apparently. And I set it all up, and I did a bunch of stuff, and I got some good numbers on some reels and some. And I got a check for 2 cents.
Oh, man.
0.02. I was like, "Are you serious right
now?" That's worse.
Worse
than not.
Yeah, just don't. Yeah. And I'm like, and it's funny because we talked about Ricky Carmichael earlier, Triumph guy, ex-racer, greatest of all time. And we have a joke thing. I'll text him and I'll post a picture of him and I'll text him just like, "Collab, you know, do you want to collab on this thing?" And he's talking crap on me, you know, we sort of go back and forth and give it back to each other. But he's like, you can't pay me enough to do a collab or something. I said, "Oh, I'll give you half of the check I just got." So I sent him the screenshot of the 2 cents payment that I got. And so, yeah, I don't know how, I mean, I'm pretty good with computers and I couldn't figure out how to get paid, you know?
Yeah, I didn't even know that was an option yet on YouTube. Maybe it's new.
Yeah, Instagram.
On Instagram.
Yeah, it was weird. So anyway.
No, and that one. I think on Instagram, it's a weird one, even for your profession, where that's sort of become. It's replaced the need for a website for
it's just marketing. Yeah,
it's just marketing.
I pay for a website, and I'm actually like, do I really need that anymore? Because I don't even know.
Yeah, that's it. It's your portfolio, effectively.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So.
Oh, cool. I think we're gonna wrap up pretty quick here because we need to go catch
to the
a
airport.
Flight.
We're gonna go to the airport again.
All this travel we've been talking about, we're gonna go do some. But man, Simon, it's been awesome to have you out for this shoot. Hopefully, I think you know it's gonna work out that we'll see you again in about a month. And and thanks for sitting down and chatting with me this morning.
Yeah, thanks. It was really interesting. And, you know, I got to visit the Triumph factory. You know, I went to England to visit my family a couple of years ago. And I go more than every 2 years, by the way. But anyway, I went 2 years ago to the Triumph factory and really cool. I mean, I was blown away. And my wife was with me and we got to see the museum. We got to see the James Bond bike. And yeah, it was awesome. So a big fan of Triumph.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thanks for letting me know. And I mean, that is a good plug, by the way. We have a really nice visitors experience center and museum and factory tour. And it's a bit out of the way, right? For a lot of people travel and they spend time in London. But, you know, if you can dedicate some time and make the 2-hour trip a little bit north to Hinckley, it's worth a visit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're a bike nut, you got to go there and check it out. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's cool. All right. Well, thank you, Simon, and catch you soon.
Thanks.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed hearing from Simon. I really enjoyed that one myself. If you'd like to see the photographs that I'm talking about, just check back on triumphmotorcycles.com about a week from now. So next week, specifically on Tuesday, September 9th, is when we should be announcing to the world the motorcycle that we're actually in West Virginia doing all the photos about. So come on back, check out that bike next week when it launches. And until next time, ride safe.